But when you're asked to do it, it's somehow difficult. I don't know why. Maybe the rest will be unimportant. How's that? Unimportant enough? Did that work? Yeah, okay, good. There have been various difficulties of communication about exactly how to frame this evening's talk. When I was first asked to talk about Lebanese-Syrian relations, I said, you know, I'm glad to talk about the United States and the Middle East and things I know something about, but I don't really know very much about Lebanese-Syrian relations and have nothing much to say about it. I shall say a few things toward the end, but will only just express my own view on the subject. I was opposed to the entry of the Syrian army into Lebanon in 1976 when it was welcomed by the United States and Israel because its task at that time was to slaughter Palestinians, as it did quite successfully in Tell el-Zaatar and other massacres. And I've remained opposed to its presence over the years, and I don't think it should be present now. With regard to acts of terror like yesterday's bombing, we should all, of course, deplore those. And we might remember the major single terrorist bombing in Beirut, which happened just 20 years ago. I'm now excluding aggression, you know, massive atrocities, you know, aerial bombing, and so on, just keeping to terrorist acts. The worst terrorist bombing, what did yesterday's killed, I think, 12 people. The worst one killed about 80 people, mostly women and girls, injured a couple hundred others. It was a truck bomb placed outside a mosque, timed to go off just when people left, huge explosion. The target of the bomb was a Muslim cleric. He escaped, but many others didn't. That terrorist bombing, however, is out of history because it violates a crucial condition. It was traced back to the CIA, and therefore it didn't happen. So it's not part of the record of terrorism, along with a mass of other things like it. So it may have happened, but it's not part of history. And I'll talk about a lot of other things that may have happened but aren't part of history. In the background, you know, interchange about today's event, at one point, maybe now, an abstract was proposed which had to do with the U.S., the prospects for democracy, independence, peace in the Middle East, and the U.S. Double standards with regard to those issues over the past years. That's a topic I think I can talk about, so I will. However, I'm always uncomfortable when the question of double standards comes up. The term is understandable, but I think it's quite misleading. It would be more reasonable, I think, to accept the conclusions of the most of the scholars who are the most enthusiastic advocates and participants in what are called these days democracy promotion projects, the leading theme of U.S. foreign policy. The most prominent of them is the director of the Democracy and Rule of Law Project at the Carnegie Endowment, Thomas Carruthers. He describes himself as a neo-Reaganite and hopes that Reagan's profound commitment to democracy promotion will in fact be the guiding principle for U.S. Foreign policy. That's his role at the Carnegie Endowment, leading the project. He has a book that just came out which reviews the post-Cold War experience in democracy promotion, and I'll just quote you from it. He finds what he calls a strong line of continuity. Where democracy appears to fit in well with U.S. security and economic interests, the United States promotes democracy. Where democracy clashes with other significant interests,